It's been a remarkable campaign season. Ebola and ISIS have handed one party the opportunity to fan the fires of fear and portray the administration as inept and indecisive, a strategy the mainstream media sadly has eagerly buttressed in its quest for ratings. On the other side, we've seen an embarrassing number of candidates of the president's own party distance themselves from the White House and from the achievements they themselves were a part of. And a number of races have included the kinds of surprises that make for good reality television. We could sit back and enjoy if only the stakes weren't so terribly high for the nation. I am delighted to have Greg LaBelle with me in the studio with a wealth of experience in electoral politics and now an assistant professor of political management at George Washington University. Greg always brings a perspective that helps cut through the incessant noise of the electoral horse race. Greg, welcome back to State of Belief Radio.
Thanks, Welton. I hope we can do that today.
Have you been enjoying the midterm election campaigns this year?
Enjoying is not the right word. Obsessed by them, yeah. Enjoying, no, I don't think that fits.
Is there anything in recent weeks politically that made you think, I can't believe that just happened?
I think the impact of the Ebola situation in particular has been surprising and somewhat frustrating. The Ebola situation sort of came together to sort of personify what people see as problems with the Obama administration was something that was surprising and frustrating.
Yeah. In fact, I heard someone just the other day say, well, this is really the midterm election of fear. How much a factor is fear in what will happen on Tuesday?
I think it's a significant piece. But then we think back to 2010 and we think of the fear factor around Obamacare, the death panels, all of that stuff that was out there. So this is not unique in that sense, but there's certainly been a lot of that at play here.
The media, as you know, has made a whole lot out of Democrats, quote, unquote, running away from Obama. How much of that have you seen happening?
Well, again, I don't think that it's all that unusual in the sixth year of an administration. Voters tend to get a little tired of presidents after 6 years. And I think that this president has experienced that maybe to a greater extent than others in the past. But it's not that unusual for this sort of impact to sort of settle in. We think about it, 6 years, presidents almost always suffer losses in the Senate and in House elections. I think Bill Clinton was the only one probably who didn't.
Greg, when you're in the classroom talking with smart people about American politics, is the president that negative a figure, or is he getting buffeted by a lot of partisan politics that make him look that bad?
All of the above.
All of the above.
You start with the fact that presidents tend to reach a certain nadir of popularity around this time in second terms. We add to it the uncertainty that we've been facing on the international scene for some time. ISIS, Ebola, the rise of Putin's Russia in Ukraine. These are the circumstances that all serve to add to that sense of uncertainty. The stock market in the last week alone, I think, dropped close to 1,000 points, and now it's back up where it was. There is so much fluctuation out there that I think people are just nervous.
Is the fear really related to the president and the Democratic Party, or are people simply scared because the economy hasn't come back as quickly as it should and their lives are just not going like they want them to?
All of those factors come into play. The economy, the realities of what we're facing on an international level, this all sort of comes into play in the way Americans are sort of looking at their lives and the presidency. I think what we're seeing is that voters are fed up with Washington. I think it's less about Democrats or Republicans or this president than just Washington in general. People have lost confidence in our ability to do anything in this town.
When it comes to the GOP overarching message, if you take out not Obama, what is there in that message?
Not much beyond that message. Republicans running for the Senate across the country have been running against Barack Obama. Just watch the ads from Kay Hagan in North Carolina to Jean Shaheen in New Hampshire to Mark Begich in Alaska. It's this guy voted with Obama, fill in the blank, number of times. Mm-hmm. They've tried to nationalize this election around Obama in the same way the Democrats have done in the past with George W. Bush and at one point with Newt Gingrich. This is not an unusual tactic in politics, but that really has been the message. Nationalize this thing around a very unpopular president right now.
Well, let me ask a similar question about the Democratic Party. The strategy clearly has been to stay away from the president, not be identified with him. But what is their message?
I would say it a little differently. I think that what the smart Democrats are doing and the ones who seem to be doing – I hesitate to use the word well – Democrats who are doing better than some of their colleagues right now, it's about localizing the election. It's about making it about the issues that are facing the folks in their states. And I think to the extent that they can talk about what they've done about more local issues – they are finding a little bit more success in voters' minds.
I know it's hard to generalize, but overall, who do you see missing more opportunities or making the most mistakes?
I'm going to sort of twist that question around a little bit, because what the Republicans have done well this time is avoid the kind of meltdowns that we saw in past elections with Republicans getting out there saying crazy stuff. There hasn't been that much of that, so that's to their credit. The result is they only talk about Obama. Whether that's going to work or not, I don't know. I think the other piece of this is mechanics, and it's about getting out the vote, because again, we know this is a smaller electorate. People are less likely to vote. We won't know the answer to this until the day after the election, but if the Democratic Party has done what they have seemed to have invested in doing, we may see some races that don't go the way we think they're going to go right now. I think particularly of Mark Begich in Alaska. If Mark Begich's ground game, people on the ground talking with voters who don't usually get talked to, is as good as it appears to be, Begich may hang on to that seat. That's one of the big differences. The Republicans don't seem to have the wherewithal to be able to put together those kinds of ground games. And that's partly because they've never – traditionally, they haven't had to do that.
Yeah. So if you're the consultant to both parties and we're right exactly where we are as the weekend before the election, what are you counseling candidates to do?
I'm saying it's all about get out the vote right now. It's all about getting those folks to the polls. And obviously, there are different pockets depending on who I'm talking to. Republicans have to make sure that they're getting that core base of supporters out there. And I think they've done a pretty good job of keeping them in line by and large. That Democrats, on the other hand, have to make sure that those folks who traditionally don't vote, and there are a lot more of them who identify as Democrat who don't vote in off-year elections, primarily people of color who simply don't participate, Democrats need to get them to get out there and vote. So it really is about getting out the vote at this point.
What are the races that you're going to watch most closely?
You know, I think the three races that I look at, Montana, South Dakota, and West Virginia are probably going to flip from Democrat to Republican. The Republicans have leads that are outside the margin of error right now, some substantially. I mean, in Montana, Daines is up by 18 points. Louisiana is an interesting race. I think Landrieu will probably win, but Louisiana is one of those states where the winner needs to get 50% plus one. She won't do that. They already have started to do some polling with her against Cassidy in a runoff, and he wins that. And that's not a surprise. So she may end up on top on Election Day, but probably will not be able to hold on when we get to the runoff a little bit further down the road. Arkansas is probably gone. The numbers aren't quite as broad. But, you know, Tom Cotton's proven to be a much better candidate than anybody thought he would. Mm-hmm. Colorado, anybody's guess at this point. The difference is about 3 points. The way we tend to look at these things is anyone who's up by 3 points at this point is probably in fairly good shape. But some of these numbers have been so volatile that I'm not sure that that's the case. Again, I think with Colorado, it's going to come down to the ground game, who does the better job of getting out the vote. But if you look at those right there, if those go the way they look, the Senate switches hands. The mm-hmm. Senate goes to a Republican majority in January. Georgia, again, that's another runoff state. The difference right now between the two candidates is 0.5%. Kentucky, McConnell's up by 4. You know, he's been up since May. I think the odds are that McConnell will probably hang on to the seat. She's done a pretty good job of running against him, better than anyone ever thought she would do. He's put in $2 million of his own money at this point in the race. He hasn't had to do that very often. Again, Alaska, we talked about that. I think it's going to come down to the ground game. It's close. But if Begich is doing what it looks like he's doing with his get-out-the-vote effort, he might actually pull that off. Shaheen in New Hampshire, I think, will be okay. She's up by about two by most. I have to say, I have never seen this many races this far down the road that were this close, that are well within the margin of error in these races. I think Shaheen will probably be all right, partly because she has such a good organization in New Hampshire. Mm-hmm. North Carolina is a dead tie right now. It's a tie. Yeah. Hagen's been doing a good job. She's been in the lead, to pull, which is surprising because this was, I mean, from way back, people saying, Hagen's gone, you know, mm-hmm. before we really saw some of these other races. So she's done a good job. Iowa, who knows? Ernst is up by two. She's been up for quite a while by a point or two. It's hard to tell there, but that may be one that flips to Republicans as well. So, you know, Republicans could easily pick up six seats here.
There are some commentators, Greg, saying that we may not know who's in charge of the Senate until January 2015.
That may well be true. It's possible that with Louisiana and Georgia out there without a candidate getting 50% plus one, that we aren't going to know until those elections. But, and that also throws into question Kansas, because Greg Orman in Kansas has said that he will caucus with whomever has the majority. So he'd be very comfortable moving with a Democratic majority if that were the case. And the Republicans have been going after him, yeah. Nevertheless, for his good standing in the state. When the time comes, he's going to go with the majority. And we might not know where he's going to land until these other two races are settled.
How much difference would it make if the Republicans take the Senate?
That's a very interesting question, because there is a theory, and I subscribe to it, that in the long term, Republicans are now in a position of having to govern. They have not been in that position for the last 6 years, because the House could always say, oh, well, we tried, but Harry Reid wouldn't let anything through. That's not going to work anymore. Plus, both the House and the Senate are going to be bringing in more Tea Party folks. Some of these folks who are going to win out there, Tom Cotton being one of them, these are Tea Party folks. So the House and Senate under Republican control are going to be harder for their leaders to manage, even than this House has been for Boehner to manage over the last few years. These numbers, where so many Democratic seats are up now in this year, flip by the time we get to the general election in 2016. So a lot more Republican seats are going to be up. Republicans are going to have to be able to say, this is what we did. Mm-hmm. And it's they're going to be hard put to do it. So there are some who argue that losing the Senate may not be the worst thing in the long term for the president and his party.
We've been talking since 2000. We've been talking about having a divided nation. And yet we don't have any precedent for midterms that are as closely contested as what we've got right now.
Right.
Does that mean we're even more divided?
Yes. And I think this is a much deeper issue or problem in this country, this partisan division. I think we need to get to the point, and I don't know how we get there, but we need to get to the point where we begin to look at some of the core principles of our democracy, the way we determine congressional districts, for example. I mean, that whole process has exacerbated this increasingly extreme partisanship that we see in this country. Members of Congress are rarely speaking to the middle anymore, because they're speaking to their corner, and that works on both sides. And that means the rhetoric is hotter. It means it's more difficult for us to get anything done.
And so whatever happens on Election Day, that's not going
away.
Greg LaBelle's assistant professor of political management at George Washington University and head of the Semester in Washington program, which means he helps drag promising young Americans into this sordid world of politics. Greg, thank you so much for being here today.
Thanks. I'm looking forward to seeing you again.